My great-grandfather came here in the early 1930s. He was he owned a store down in Aarberg, Manitoba, and we're not sure what drove him here. We think maybe he lost money in the stock market in 29 and decided he was going somewhere. And so he was coming here, and he wanted to bring the material to build the store, a store here in Churchill. And the government wouldn't let him because at that point they were building this model city here called Roblin City, and it was going to be 20,000 people, and they didn't want anybody messing up the landscape, I guess. So he, being a stubborn old Icelander, he took his two sons and one of my aunts and enough material and a boat builder and got on the train as far as Gillam. They let him go to Gillam, and he got off there and over two summers built a Peterhead boat. And after the second summer, he hired himself a native guide, and the native guide brought him to Churchill via York Factory. He worked it so that he landed in York Factory on treaty days, and he anchored out in the river and ran competition to the Hudson Bay Company. One of the sons went by canoe back and forth to get people to come onto the boat to spend their, because he had all the goods that he was bringing here to Churchill. So that's how we got here.
We were both born there, and our mother had gone up there in the early 30s with her parents, and our father came up in mid-30s, 32
and 34. And a couple of buddies rode the freight trains to Churchill and got off the...
He left a work camp, which his mother was not happy about, and traveled on the rail lines to get and headed north.
Get off the train, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
His first job was a ditch digger for the, the railway was finished, but they were just building the grain elevators. So he went to work there, and he said one day he was in a digging a ditch, and he heard somebody say, Freddie Martin, and he looked up, and here it was a friend of his dad's from Montreal, so he claimed he got a promotion that day and got to come out of the come out of the pit.
They were traders and trappers. Opened a
trading post up at Magoose River, which is just out of Arviat, and they ran that until they moved down here in 47, just before Mom had me.
And eventually ran
and reopened the general store that my grandfather originally built, and that was what they did for a living.
My mom tells a story of being jealous of Grace Black when they were at the trappers' cabins because she had a real mattress and Mom only had something stuffed with straw or something.
And a friend talks about her mom waking up in the morning and having to put rubber boots on in the spring because the cabin was flooded and she had to walk over to get the stove stoked and get things started.
And probably a lot of wild meat, but also a lot of lard and canned bacon and click and spam.
Maybe even a canned chicken on a special occasion.
I mean, that's what they ate because that's all they had, right?
Yeah.
And Mom was a trapper's wife. Mom was up north at the trading post and lived that life, so.
Yeah.
Was there a grandma before you?
No. I've lasted the longest in this position. It's the peer program. And Grandma Helen has evolved from the peer program because of the food and the children and the friendships I've developed and the love that I've received.
I grew up here and came back in 1999, so over 30 years I've been here, and my mother was Ukrainian and a great cook, and so she would try to feed her family with as economical as possible. Growing things and picking berries and stuff was part of our culture. And then when we moved to Churchill, it was a little bit more challenging because of our seasons and the types of things that are here are different from what we were used to. So we had to adapt to that. And our farm didn't work out, and so my dad had to go north to seek employment, and trying to live.
He ended up in Churchill,
utilizing everything that's available to us on the land, and including hunting, trying to eat organic.
My brother's still here.
Caribou,
he has a
and
license
and
for
fish
and all that,
catching
it,
like that, and him and his son
shooting.
Still go hunting,
not me,
things like that.
Oh,
that would be my dad that passed that on to him. And picking berries, promoting foraging, taking people and showing them berry patches and mushroom patches, working with people like Brian Ladoon, who's gone now, and who's spent his life living off the land and trying to bring people together and show them where to go and what to do and how to prepare food.
Pretty well all of our berries are ground berries. Yeah, there's only one on each stem, but like up at Seal River, there's
pounds
of ground berries. It was a lot. It was a lot. And blueberries.
But yeah, we go. I've even arranged a bus. And
third week of July, normally they start to ripen enough to be picked. And by the second week of August, better be done.
We have about 3 days. So they leave their blue poop everywhere, laughing at us the whole time.
So the goose breast has been well sprinkled with season, darkened on both sides, and now I'm going to bath it in vermouth. And just let it simmer for a minute, not even.
What got you started in cooking at lodges?
My husband decided to buy a hunting lodge, and they needed a cook.
And I don't know whether it was the same with you at I started going to Diamond Lake with Helen when I was 17. Many of my things I learned from Queen, that was where I learned it.
So these are at the lodges?
Yeah.
So yeah, same thing. We would go up and we'd have to learn how to cook bacon and eggs for the goose hunters. And
We cooked for ourselves, but we didn't know how to serve it necessarily, right? Yeah.
It's very much like beef. In fact, a lot of people think of beef. In fact, that reminds me of a story. We had a goose hunters at the lodge one year, and one fellow was kind of on his own, and we served goose pie for dinner. After dinner, he came to me quietly in the kitchen, and he said, "I know I'm at a goose hunting lodge, but I just want to let you know that I don't eat goose." And I said, "Oh, okay. Well, how did you enjoy the supper?" "Oh, that beef pie, that was just delicious." So I didn't say a word. I didn't bother to tell him that he'd eaten goose for dinner and all. We don't serve it at the lodges to our paying guests anymore. We did at one time with the goose hunters. We were able to serve them the goose because they shot it. So that's not a problem. And the same with the fishermen at the fishing lodge eat the fish that they catch for lunch. So it would be kind of silly to go to a place like that and then not be able to enjoy it for a meal after you've harvested it yourself. So now just all family and friends get to enjoy the wild region. With the snow goose population exploding the way it has, and I can tell, I've been cooking at hunting lodges for over 50 years, and there is a huge difference in the number of birds
when
that
we start
around now
with the goose
as compared to when I first started.
We need to harvest more, and
there has to be a use for them.
We don't want to just be harvesting them.
I know.
But they're not using them.
They go out on like goose hunts, and they'll set up like a camp, and they'll cook the goose and everything. They'll teach the kids how to pluck the feathers and that kind of thing. But that we need that. We need people that still go out on the land and do that. And that's the kind of thing that I'm fighting to try to bring back. I want people to teach others how to shoot in a respectful way, how to be thankful, how to honor the traditions of the past.
But they say that humans will take the easiest path to consume the calories they need, right? So, even though you might traditionally be hunting moose and caribou, if there's a store or a trading post, you're going to be hanging out there and accessing those calories, right? And that you see that very quickly, where people just went, why would I go hunting? I'd go to a store here.
Let me start. So with the birds, there's like ptarmigan, the geese, season, the different kinds of geese. So there's rabbits, there's caribou, moose.
There was a lot of harvesting. You know, people did that, and that was a way of saving some money. Technically, they would say that, except, you know, you had to have your snowmobile and you had to have your boat.
Probably cost more.
But, you know, guys growing up, the guys would be setting nets down at in Hudson Bay. They run, there's an Arctic char run past Churchill, and so it's only, it doesn't last all the time. And they'd have to go out
right now,
like at 2 in the morning because that was low tide, so they would go check the nets.
And they still do that.
They still do,
stock up their food.
So the hunting and the fishing and the setting of nets and stuff was all, and the harvesting the berries and things like that, that all augmented everybody's menu, right? Not so much ours growing up because Mom had the store.
We never stockpiled food in our house. We probably had the least food in our cupboards. You know, all the Mom owned the grocery store.
My friends used to complain they don't want to cover the one can of hands.
And
they'd be like, why do you have no food?
Bread.
Well, because the old meat is across the street at the store that nobody else bought. But we didn't know that the old meat meant the best meat.
Milk, and at that time it wasn't dated.
Mother was a great
and so.
You never took a drink till you smelled it, because it was probably
common
sour.
Occurrence. You get up in the morning and the milk is sour.
By
so
the time we were...
You know, that was just the reality.
That was very common. Or even 10, 11. Our mom was working full-time because our dad had passed away. And so she was running the store. And then we cooked dinner often. Patty and I, would cook dinner. And in those days, we often cooked one full dinner in an electric frying pan. That was the standard thing. You throw the meat in, and then you throw whatever else.
Like I think, for one big change is certainly we eat a lot more fresh food than we did earlier. You know, growing up, it wasn't that we didn't have any, but certainly not the variety that we have now. I didn't even know what an avocado was when I was growing up, or
so
I think traveling and trying different things in different places and then coming home and adapting it to what we have here, I think that a lot of that has gone on.
When I left home, I was on my own at 17, and I was always calling my mother for recipes. I spent a year in Winnipeg, and I'd be phoning
always
her
had a passion for good
how
food
to do
and pierogies
or how
traditional
to
food.
Do things because I was... My daughter, she decided at 2 that she didn't want meat. So I had to learn how to change all of my cooking and everything to incorporate her tastes. And that's where the nutrition and all that, I started reading about alternatives and things like that. I came here as a vegetarian in 99. And then I lasted about a year, and then I started... And this is the story of all the vegetarians that come here that I've connected with. You crave meat. And we started eating the wild meat, the caribou, moose meat and fish and stuff like that. And
it's like, I don't know if it's the cold. This is Brian's theory.
When you come to Churchill from a warmer place, with the cold weather, your body needs fat and you start craving and you gain weight when you first come, and then and I think that's where the protein and stuff comes from a different source, and it's next to impossible to have a protein-based diet in Churchill without eating fish. You couldn't be a vegan.
And one of my jobs when I was quite young was cleaning a butcher shop. We had a butcher shop. Yeah, the cows would come up, half a cow frozen, and they cut them up. And so one of my jobs was, and I'm not a big meat eater, and I think it's because of this. I had to go and clean the butcher shop and Javex it every night. You had to Javex everything down, and of course, you'd get some meat.
Our mom was actually cognizant because butchers were hard to come by for years. So when she learned how to do it and haul those hind quarters and stuff. But they were all, it wasn't bloody at that.
The fellow that tried to raise pigs, but the bears got them. People have kept chickens through the years and usually lose them to something too. I don't think it's ever been a totally successful venture.
In the early days when Dad and Mom had the store, they had two or three butchers, they had cashiers, they had a floor manager.
There was enough business
to do that. And then as it was after Dad died
and over a number of years,
the population starts to decline, and now it's harder to find employees. And there was 5,000 people, and there was the fort 5 miles away, which was the army base.
There was a lot of people, and
the ships were coming in all summer, and the scientists were coming in, and the rocket range people. It was a pretty bustling place.
Share that with other elders or other people that are struggling.
Yes, and our mom and our aunt and actually been there. And then it eventually they did a lot of catering for fundraising.
Well, Helen and Louise got involved, and Mom and Helen were still there. And I think it was the Lions. I understand it was the Lions Club. They wanted some place to have their meetings, and so the Ladies Club. And by then we were getting older, so many things that Mom volunteered with, we maybe ended up going.
Got dragged.
Yeah.
Baking and mashed potatoes, cook this, cook that. And it would be like, the community hall would be full.
Yeah.
So how many people would that be? 100? More than that?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We'd be cooking these meals. And Helen and Louise were usually in charge because they knew the menu. And
then we
would
just,
anybody that was sort of loosely connected with the Lady Club and loosely connected with you would drag to come and help. And we would do these meals. And we got good at what we were assigned to, but we weren't in charge. Now, did Louise and Helen fess up to the time that they had a cocktail party and a dinner on the same day and they spent a little too long at the cocktail party? And us, rest of us are there, trying to figure out what the heck to do because our leaders weren't there and we're supposed to be feeding this 150 people. What about Helen and Louise had a van full of char? They slammed on the brakes and all the char fell. That was for one of those Lions Club dinners.
No, this group has never been church oriented. It was just a group of women that got together to help raise money for the first four-room school and just continued to do so and funded a lot of community projects, and it's kind of a spin-off and a detriment, I think, from our lottery system now where the government funds the stuff. It really takes away from that community sense of, like, we helped raise money, but we raised tons of money towards the first arena that was built here, and when you've got a whole bunch of people working together, it really changes the feeling in a community when everybody's out to get the same thing done, and you don't get that in the same way.
The things that, the Ladies Club was raising money for were all good things, like we were saying it's from birth to death, I was a member, one of the things that we purchased was the birthing bed at the hospital, and then they had also done the mechanism that lowers coffins into the grave. Because nobody had one. So it was like from birth to death, whatever was needed.
The fence in the graveyard?
the fence around the graveyard, the
furniture
for the
first
teachers
working,
in the 40s. Yeah.
Hard-working ladies did a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
And usually through cooking. That was just one way that they could raise money, was to cater.
When the train stopped running, and we wanted to do something that involved the whole community, that just brought us all together, and we ended up having 500 people come in for dinner, and we had it upstairs, and we used the school kitchen, and we had volunteers, and we had donations, and we were able to put on a beautiful, beautiful big dinner, Christmas dinner, on the 23rd of December. For me, it was the best attended thing that I ever did. Yeah, lots of good things came from that, and it still continues even now. My big thing is, you don't just give without working for it. And I try to promote, like, I want people to be proud of what they're doing and to feel, as a community, Churchill really needs us to work together. And that's been my goal, to try to get people to come and be happy to volunteer and not just come because they're getting food, but come just for friendship, for, you know, working together and sharing their skills and teaching others and being proud to be a member of Churchill no matter what.